Madhavam Kunja Vihari Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama.
Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada.
Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya
Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna. My name is Rajendra Kumar Das and I come from Vladivostok. It's far east of Russia. Before I say something, I would like to ask for blessings from senior devotees present here so that I can say something inspiring. Hare Krishna. So I was asked to give Srimad Bhagavatam class this morning, and the verses, they start from the verse number 35, and there are a few of them.
35 to 39.
Yeah. From 35 to 39. Nityada sarva bhutanam
Brahma dinam
parantapam
Utpatti pralayav eke
Sukshmagya samprachakshate Nityada sarva bhutanam
Brahmadinam parantapam
Utpati pralaya veke
Sukshmagya samprachakshate
Nityada sarva bhutanam
Brahma dinam parantapam
Utpati pralayav eke
Sukshmagya samprachakshate
Yeah. Ladies, please.
Nityada,
constantly,
sarva bhutanam,
of all created beings,
brahma adinam,
beginning with Lord Brahma,
parantapa,
O subduer of the enemies,
utpati,
creation,
Pralayu,
and annihilation.
Eke,
some.
Sukshmagya,
experts knowers of subtle things.
Samprachakshate,
declare.
Translation.
Experts in the subtle workings of nature or subduer of the enemy have declared that there are continuous processes of creation and annihilation that all created beings, beginning with Lord Brahma, constantly undergo. Verse number 36. All material entities undergo transformation and are constantly and swiftly eroded by the mighty currents of time. The various stages of existence that material things exhibit are the perpetual causes of their generation and annihilation. Verse number 37. These stages of existence created by the beginningless and endless time, the impersonal representative of the Supreme Lord, are not visible just as the infinitesimal momentary changes of position of the planets in the sky cannot be directly seen. Purport. Although everyone knows that the sun is constantly moving in the sky, one cannot normally see the sun moving. Similarly, no one can directly perceive his hair or nails growing, although with the passing of time, we perceive the fact of growth. Time, the potency of the Lord, is very subtle and powerful. It is an insurmountable barrier to fools who are trying to exploit the material creation. Verse number 38. In this way, the progress of time is described in terms of the four kinds of annihilation: continuous, occasional, elemental, and final. Verse number 39. All the best of the Kurus, I have related to you the narrations of the pastimes of Lord Narayan, the creator of this world and the ultimate reservoir of all existence, presenting them to you only in brief summary. Even Lord Brahma himself would be incapable of describing them entirely.
Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Miritamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitamena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Sadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sinhutya Evacha Patitanam Pavani Bhyo Vaishnavikyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare.
Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutalesha Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste, Sarasvati Devi, Gauravani, Pracharine, Nirvishesha, Shunyavadi, Pashtitya, Devi, Shantarine. So, once again, we can read the verse.
Nityada sarva bhutanam brahma dinam parantapa upati pralayav eke sukshma gyasam prachakshate.
Experts in the subtle workings of nature or subduer of the enemy have declared that there are continuous processes of creation and annihilation, that all created beings, beginning with Brahma, constantly undergo.
So, in this chapter, Shukadeva Goswami is describing the movements of the time
that cause all changes in our life. And we know that people are generally very much afraid of the end of the world, some major destruction. But from this chapter we understand that actually this destruction is taking place constantly, every second. But this basic destruction is very subtle, and our limited senses cannot register this subtle changes. And Sukadeva Goswami mentions four stages of destruction or annihilation. And this annihilation is being executed with the force of time. So if we actually look attentively at the world, we can see that the universe is a huge clock. And the clock, you know, it just measures the time. And the planets, different constellations, they are just tools in the hands of the Supreme. And with these tools, he is changing everything. Planets are his instruments of karma, because living entities from the time immemorial, they create a lot of different karmas, and the karma should be given, the fruit should be given to the living entities, and the time is that factor with the help of which Krishna is giving us these fruits. Although time is invisible, it has quite visible impact on us. I remember in the 70s there was a popular song by the famous band Pink Floyd. It was called Time. And I can read you a little fraction from that song. And it says, ticking away the moments that make up a dull day, frittering waste the hours in the offhand way, kicking around in a piece of a ground in a hometown, waiting for someone or something to show you the way. Tired of lying in the sunshine, staying home to watch the rain. You are young and life is long and there is time to kill today. And then one day you find 10 years have gone behind you. No one told you when to run, you missed the starting gun. And you run and you run to catch up with the sun, but it's sinking, racing around to come up behind you again. The sun is the same in a relative way, but you're older, shorter of breath, and one day closer to death. So definitely the song was inspired by some revelation, you know, some inspiration maybe coming even from Srila Prabhupada's books, who knows. It was 1973, so book distribution was in full swing at that time. So these ideas were more or less obvious to the people. And the idea is that time is an invisible but very valuable thing. Actually, it is the most valuable thing that we have in our life. Because sometimes people say that time is money. It's not a fact, because you know money you can lose and you can restore it again. But if you lose even a fraction of time, you cannot return it. You know, as Chanakya Pandit states, you know, even for the all gold of the earth, you cannot return even a moment of time. So it means that you know this is the most valuable thing that we have in life, and we can fill the time with different things as. We can see from that song, you can just, you know, waste your time, or you can fill it with something, you know, substantial. And Srimad Bhagavatam gives us the clue how the time can be wasted, or how can time be used properly. If you understand that we are actually in this constant, ongoing flow, a river of time, which changes everything, then we may start to think that time is really something valuable and we could try to utilize it properly. So let us go back and see, you know, how these four stages of destruction are taking place. So the first one is called the current. It means that it takes place all the time. Actually, it is the basis of so-called internal reincarnation. Many people think that reincarnation is just, you know, a change from one body to another at the time of death. That's true, but Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, verse number 13, that like within one life, the soul travels from the body of the child, then to the body of youth, and then to the body of the old man. In a similar way, at the time of death, the soul changes and goes to another body. So it means that reincarnation starts just within our body. And according to medical science, every 7 years, all the cells of our body are changed, completely changed, and up to the bones. These bones are very hard, but even cells of the bones, they also are being replaced with time. Because there is a metabolism, some new energy comes in, and old energy comes, new matter comes in, and old energy, old matter goes out. You know, like we breathe in, breathe out, we drink some water, take some food, then we go to the toilet. Then, you know, it goes out, and then again. So that's why material body is called asat. Asat means actually non-existent. Non-existent in a sense that is never constant. It's like a very, very slow flow of material particles, which, you know, go around the soul. So our senses are not that strong to register all the subtle senses. And being an illusion, we tend to think that we are, you know, like stable, constant. But actually, the subtle changes takes place every moment, every moment. This is called current destruction. Then occasional destruction, it happens at the end of the day of Brahma. That's called pralaya. And it's a big change. It's a very dramatic change. It's a destruction when lower and middle planets are being destroyed. And only Brahma Loka and a few levels of this Saptarishis, I mean, this rishis who dwell on these higher planets, they remain. They actually go to sleep to Brahma Loka for the time of night of Brahma. And then Mahapralaya, it's a third kind of destruction, Mahapralaya, when Mahavishnu inhales, all the universes go back to his body. And this cosmic cataclysm, it takes you know, a lot of time, billions and billions of years, literally. And the fourth or final annihilation, as Shukadeva Goswami explains, is the liberation. So when the living entity becomes spiritually mature and understands that, you know, we are not part of this world, realizes its eternal position, our eternal position, then living entity is practically liberated, and this material world doesn't exist anymore. There is no cause, no reason to stay in this creation anymore. So these are four stages of destruction. And this destruction, as I mentioned, is caused by time, but time is not independent. It's not just some independent force. Modern people who are brought up in schools, in universities, they've been taught that in this world they have material particles and some forces which, you know, kick these particles around, push them around. But what we know from Srimad Bhagavatam that all these forces, they are not independent. There are different energies like gravitation, magnetism, radiation, anything. But all these forces, all these energies, they have some source. Like, you know, we can see the light, but we know that, you know, the bulb or sun, they are the sources of that light. So in a similar way, whatever force, whatever energy we see in this material world, we know that there is a source of it. Like for us, when we say a wind, we don't just mean just some movement of the air. We understand that there are marutas, you know, who are blowing. And they're actually the living force behind these winds, hurricanes. So it's a good thing to know not just energies, but the sources of energy. So time is not independent. Time is, we can say, it's an action of this Sudarshana chakra, but Vishnu is holding the Sudarshana chakra. So that's why we have another definition of time, that the time is a will of the Lord. And will is the manifestation of somebody's desire. So it's a living person. Has some plan. That's why it's not just some impersonal force. Well, it looks impersonal, but actually Krishna's will is behind it. Krishna's will is behind that activity of time. So with the help of different planets, Krishna show us what he wants from us. And with the help of different planets, he gives us our karma. With the help of Shani or Saturn, he makes us suffer. with the help of Jupiter or Guru, he makes us enlightened or interested in the spiritual life. With the help of Mars, he makes us active. With the help of Moon, he makes us emotional, like that. With the help of Venus, he makes us passionate. So Krishna is using these different energies, different tools to execute his plan and to give us a chance to, you know, fulfill our desires in this material world. So he has two programs, like, you know, execute his plan and give us a chance to execute our plans. And why would Krishna destroy his own creation? Generally, when we create something, we value what we created. But from Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that Krishna creates this world, maintains it for a while, and then he mercilessly, we can say, destroy it. So why is he doing that? His own creation. Actually, he is doing that out of love. Because he doesn't want us to take shelter in the wrong place. Searching for shelter is quite natural for the living entities because we are, you know, very minute particle and, you know, small creatures, they have a tendency to look for shelter and, you know, find shelter with some, you know, mighty creatures. And living entities here, we are lost, we have lost the shelter of Krishna and we are trying to find some artificial shelters in this material world. So when we come here, our first shelter is mother's womb. Then we go out from the shelter and take shelter in our home. Our family becomes our shelter. Then next we go to school and our schoolmates, they become our next shelter. Then we finish school and we, you know, go to job and, you know, our colleagues and, you know, our company becomes our shelter. Then later on, who knows what, in the end, the hospital becomes our shelter. And finally, the coffin or grave becomes our shelter. And then again, another mother's womb, and like that, we go in circles. So Krishna doesn't want us to have these wrong shelters. And that's why he destroys them all with the force of time. And instead, he offers us our perpetual shelter. He says, come to me. Mam ekam sharanam vraja. Sharanam means shelter. It's ashraya. Ashraya is one of the 10th topics of Srimad Bhagavatam, the last one. And living entities should be intelligent enough to find that perpetual eternal shelter. And for that, we have to go through the series of different, we will say, frustrations. When we meet all this destruction, whatever we create is being destroyed by time. And when it happens again and again, bhutva, bhutva, pralayate, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that all the time living entities being helpless are destroyed with this force of time when the end of Brahma comes and they just are being immersed in the deep sleep, sushupti, state of sushupti, and then again. So after a few cycles, like that, living entity becomes a little wise, and you know, some wise idea, you know, come to our head, and we can start to understand that maybe there is something eternal. Maybe we have to try our luck elsewhere, and that's why Krishna gives us this beautiful offer. He says, "Sarvadharman parityaja, mam ekam sharanam vraja." But it requires some maturity and some experience. So. Unless a living entity goes through all these different kinds of destructions, unless a living entity goes through all these disappointments and troubles, it's difficult to you know, mold this very mature intelligence which can come to this kind of conclusion. So that's why we need time. So Krishna gives us this playground of material existence to experiment, to try to execute our desires, our plan. And when it's all over, when it all is destroyed, then, you know, we start to think about something else. And in Bhagavad Gita chapter 13, verse 17, Krishna says that in the form of Paramatma, he develops everything and then he devours everything. Grasishnu, Prabha Vishnu Cha. So he gives development to everything and then mercilessly, you know, he devours everything. So he devours in what form? In form of time. So kala, time, is another function of Paramatma. So with the help of Paramatma, he just absorbs things. He just, you know, devours them all. So it's his activity. And so he, Krishna, gives us chance and he takes this chance away. He gives us some time to play here, to, you know, try to execute our plans, and then he says, you know, time is up. You don't have, you know, too much time left. So do something more substantial, meaningful. And generally, not many people become so much enlightened in the very beginning of life, like Shankaracharya, who took sannyas at the age of 6. You know, generally, it and it requires some more, 50, 60 years to come to the idea that, you know, all these material engagements are ultimately useless and we have to do something more substantial for the benefit of the soul. Instead, as I mentioned, Krishna offers us his eternal abode, but for that we have to make this internal decision. And also Krishna in Bhagavad Gita explains the nature of this material world. In the 9th chapter, he says, anityam asukham lokam imam prapya bhaja samam. So if you find yourself in this material world, which is very temporary and devoid of happiness, so the best engagement is just, you know, do devotional service to me. Imam prapya bhaja samam, that's the best engagement for you. And he says it to Arjuna. And Arjuna is an active man. At that point, he is not vanaprastha. He is socially active and he has to fight. And Krishna explains to him that even such a horrible activity as killing people can be devotional service if Lord wants it. So he gives Arjuna a direct order. You kill for my sake, because it's my will, and don't be afraid of any reactions. So sometimes we have an idea that devotional service is just, you know, peaceful life. We sit in the temple, we just, you know, walk around the tulsi and chanting our japa. That's direct devotional service, which is very purifying, it's very peaceful, very nice, very pleasant. But sometimes devotional service may look, you know, ugly, like, you know, this fight in Kurukshetra. It's a bloodshed, actually. It's a violence, horrible violence. But Krishna takes a devotional service. If Arjuna is a tool, Arjuna is a tool. He's a sword or arrow, a weapon, we can say, in Krishna's hands. So sometimes devotional service looks not very attractive, but still it is a devotional service if it is Krishna's order. And it gives us some idea that our progress may not be only from chanting and offering flowers to the Lord and to Srila Prabhupada, but we can make progress and just by being active, executing our dharma, whatever it may be. And it broadens our idea of devotional service, which can include many kind of engagements. And for that, we require time. So the best utilization of time is to take some inspiration from Shastras, from Guru Parampara. And then this inspiration takes shape, takes form of some particular devotional service. In this way, time doesn't only shorten our material life, but it makes us closer to Krishna. So if we watch this material world and if we observe the movements of time, without devotional service, it's pretty depressing, because we see this destructive effects of time. But if we use our time in Krishna's service, then it becomes constructive. Then it makes us closer to Krishna, not just one day closer to death, but one day closer to Krishna. So the meaning is absolutely different. That's how Krishna offers us to use our time and give different higher meanings to our life. what else can I say about this stages of destruction? Well, he says that even Lord Brahma himself would be incapable of describing them entirely. So, what can I say? So, maybe there are some questions or some discussion. Okay.
Thank you, Prabhu. You touched on the winds, tornadoes, or hurricanes. Who did you say, or what did you say, blows them? Did you say some force?
Yeah.
You had a word there.
According to the science, the wind is produced by the difference of pressure. So there is air, and there is some change of pressure, and this change of pressure is manifested as the wind. That's a physical explanation of how wind blows. But metaphysical explanation, or we can say our explanation, is that if you say that there is some change of pressure, so what makes this change of pressure? So who is actually pressing? And it gives us the idea that there is some living force which is based on some will, you know. Like if I blow, so it means that I want some desire. I need to blow. I want to blow. So my desire is the original cause which, you know, switches on or activates other physical processes. So any process of blowing of the wind or, you know, shining of the sun, anything, it is all manifestation of the will of some living entity. In the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is mentioned that actually out of the fear of the Supreme Lord, the wind blows and sun shines like that. So it means that all these demigods, all these Marutas or other living creatures who have some energy to do something, they all are just doing their duty, because they are, as I mentioned, their instruments, their tools in the hand of Krishna, who is supposed to give us our karma according to the law of cosmic justice. If something is to be destroyed, you know, he can use anything, the scorching ray of the sun, rays of the sun, or, you know, his destructive winds, hurricanes, anything. So they are not just some blind forces. There is somebody's will. There is some plan behind it. If we destroy something, we are to be destroyed. You know, that's the law of cosmic justice. So Bhagavatam gives us the concept of total personification. So all forces have their personifications. Different demigods who work under the will, under the order of the Supreme. It gives us understanding that all physical processes, they are not independent. All these mechanics, they need a mechanic, the person who starts this mechanism, starts all these movements. If you understand that we are living not in just mechanical world, but in the personal world, it changes our attitude towards nature, to all these different forces. In the Mahabharata, there is a story about one bird who had a nest in the forest, and there were four little birds who just, you know, came out of the shells, and they couldn't fly yet. And that mother bird, she flew somewhere to find some food for them. And at that time, the forest fire started. And that forest fire, it was so quick, it destroyed everything around practically. But one of these little birds in the nest, he was unsuccessful brahmachari in his last life. Somehow he didn't reach liberation and he ended up as a little bird. Mm-hmm. And from his previous life, he remembered some prayer to the Lord of Fire. And he started to pray, the Lord of Fire, Agnidev, please don't burn us, you know, save us, you know, we are just little kids, like that. And since the fire is not just some blind force, it is force directed by Agnidev, so that Agnidev, you know, he accepted that little prayer, and when that mother bird returned, you know, the whole forest turned into ashes, but there was only one tree, and that tree with that nest and this birds, little birds, that they were all right. And actually, it's an example how this works. You know, when we address different forces, not as just blind forces, but as personifications, it may work. You know, if you are lucky, if you remember, you know, some prayer, or if you understand how Krishna works with this material nature, so. That gives us some idea that the world is fully personified. And if it's fully personified and there are persons on every step, it means that we have to have some personal relations. And the relation from our side is a relation based on at least respect. If not bhakti, at least respect and understanding. But if we develop some bhakti and some devotion to Krishna, that works better, you know, because personal relationship always, you know, gives us a lot of support.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Prabhu. They gave me the mic, so I guess I'll just ask my question. I appreciate the point you make about how time, Krishna's giving us time to perform devotional service rather than the time destroying everything. It's a different way to look at it. So I appreciate that. But I just had a sort of a statistical question. You mentioned the statistic that we often quote in class about how the body changes every 7 years. And of course, science always changing their viewpoint, change is always happening. But is that statistic still relevant? I mean, or is there some new data out that it changes every 5 years or 20 years or something? I just, for preaching's sake, on this note.
Well, I can't say it for sure because, you know, I don't... you know, follow all this, you know, new scientific developments and discoveries. That's just the figure I read somewhere. It looks like more or less a realistic, you know, figure. 7 years is like a cycle. Mm-hmm. But I can't guarantee that it's exactly seven, as you said, that science is always changing, maybe 5 to 20, but the principle remains the same, you know, everything is changing, and even materialistic people, even scientists, they have to accept it. But as for this calculation of how soon, as far as I know, that our skin, the surface of the skin, it is changed every 2 weeks, actually, it's quite quickly, you know. So we just shed our skin, like, you know, snake sheds the skin maybe once a year, and we do it actually every 2 weeks. But we don't notice because it is replaced by new cells of skin. And such hard things as bones, of course, you know, it takes much longer time. But, you know, 7 years, that's what I remember from some statistic I read. But, you know, if it has changed, that may be, but principle doesn't change anyway.
Mm-hmm. So Prabhu, time, we understand that, from what I understand from your class, that Krishna uses time. So then time is a servant of Krishna. Mm-hmm. So then does time have its own independence? Since it's a servant, it's a free will. Mm-hmm. We understand everything is a person, time is a person. So does it have free will?
Srila Prabhupada many times mentioned that time is an impersonal representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, of course, there is a
so-called Kalapurusha. Kalapurusha, the deity of the time, it's Vishnu holding the Sudarshana chakra, that's Kalapurusha. Mm? And in the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna manifested his universal form, he says, Kalos me, time I am, and I came to destroy everything, only you Pandavas will survive. Mm? If we take it, you know, as Krishna, as he says, time I am, in this case, we can say it's personal, then, because it's Krishna's will, ultimately. But since Krishna is not visible in this material world, so we can say that time is also an impersonal representative of the Supreme Personality of God, because we don't see the person behind him. So it's kind of achintya, bheda, bheda, tattva, so simultaneously it is personal and impersonal. It is personal in a sense that Krishna, you know, transmits or gives us his will or plan or desire through the time. So in this way, we can get quite personal message. Mm? But as a force, as an invisible force, you might state that it is, you know, impersonal. So it works both ways.
Mm? Prabhu, you mentioned that Arjuna was engaged in devotional service and fighting. So there were many soldiers there, like the other Pandavas, they were also devotees. On the other side, Bhishma Dev was a devotee. I don't know who else. So with the other soldiers fighting, were they engaged in devotional service also, or what category are they?
Well, everybody is engaged in the devotional service. But some people do it consciously and some unconsciously. If we attentively look at the world around, we can see that the whole world is a cycle of unconscious service. Mm? Everybody is serving everybody else, you know. living entities, plants, animals, you know, animals are eating plants, some bigger animals eat the small animals, and then, you know, they produce fertilizer and you know, they serve the earth and they serve other living entities, but in completely unconscious way. And our idea is to make our service conscious. Mm? Because otherwise this material machine, material mechanism of cosmos is, we can say, a self-sufficient thing where all living entities are fully engaged and they are playing their particular roles in all this mechanism without even knowing it. Mm? So they are unconsciously engaged, we can say. Mm? And when we become devotees, our service becomes conscious. We understand that Krishna has given us particular abilities, particular position, and he wants us to do something. Mm? And that's why, as Srila Prabhupada mentioned, this world is complete. What is missing is Krishna consciousness. Mm? That is missing. It's missing link. Mm? And if you understand that we are in a particular position and when we are placed in this position by Krishna's will, and it means that Krishna expects something from us. Mm? And if we establish this internal connection, which is called Bhagavan Sambandha, so connection with Bhagavan, then all our activities turn into devotional service. Otherwise, it's just karma. If you're connected to Krishna, it becomes karma yoga, which is the beginning stage of bhakti yoga. And when we add some devotion, then karma yoga becomes devotional service. Mm? Or at least some karma mishra bhakti. There is some bhakti there. Mm? Everybody was engaged in devotional service, but the level of their realization, what they were doing, was different. Of course, Bhishma Dev was one of the, you know, most advanced people there who participated in Kurukshetra battle. And for him, it was also kind of exchange when we read this chapter in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavata, the departure of Bhishma Dev. He gives his understanding when there was some exchange, he was fighting with Arjuna, and he was powerful enough actually to kill Arjuna, but Arjuna was fully under Krishna's protection, and Krishna even had to break his promise, and that he promised not to participate in the fight, but he jumped off the chariot, and he grabbed some wheel and threw it at the Bhishma Dev to protect Arjuna. Bhishma Deva, he was enjoying this exchange because it was a virya rasa, a chivalry exchange. Mm? Virya rasa means that, they are fighting, but they enjoy this fighting. Mm? So in this way, we can say that arrows of Bhishma Deva, they were hurting Krishna's body, but it is said that it was like a kiss of flower, like that. So for Bhishma Dev, definitely it was a devotional service, at least that part when there was personal exchange with Krishna. And his consciousness was quite broad to understand what is happening. Mm? That's why actually after the battle, Pandavas, headed by Maharaj Yudhishthira, they approached Bhishma Dev, not anybody else, because he was, you can say, the most wise person there. Mm? And he was a grandfather of the Kuru dynasty, and he shared some experience with them. He gave some very valuable instructions to Maharaj Yudhishthira how to run the kingdom, like that. So definitely his consciousness was deep and broad enough to understand what was going on. So at least on his part, it was definitely devotional service. Others could be engaged unconsciously.
The devotional service was in not in favorable way, just like Kamsa.
Mm-hmm.
Kamsa performed the devotional service, but in the unparalleled way to kill Krishna. So all in the battle of Kurukshetra, on other side, on the Kaurava side, they were performing, actually it was Krishna was there. So Krishna is all good, doesn't matter whether it's enemy or whether it's devotee. So in this case, on the Kaurava side, they all were doing, Krishna was present there. So they got the liberation anyhow, all the people on the Kaurava side. But they were performing devotional service in unfavorable way. But still Krishna is so kind that Krishna gave liberation to even on the side of the Kaurava side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there is a slight difference between the liberation and becoming the personal associate of the Lord. In the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada mentions this point that Kamsa was also thinking about Krishna, but not in a favorable way. And when Rupa Goswami gives the description of devotional, the definition of devotional service, he says, anukulyana Krishna anushilanam. Anukulya means favorable approach, favorable mood. So he wants to do something pleasant for Krishna. Hmm? And definitely Kamsa was thinking about Krishna, but not in a favorable mood. So that's why he got liberation, but not personal association. So there is a difference between that. And it is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam that everyone who was killed at the Battle of Kurukshetra, they all got liberation because it was all happening under the Krishna's glance. He was watching everything and he was seeing everything. So anybody who had that contact, the touch of Krishna's glance, they got liberated. But also it is mentioned that those Yadu dynasty, they were demigods, so they just returned to their position of demigods. So we can say that we are liberated from this earthly plane of existence and return to the abodes of the demigods. So there, we can say liberation was relative. For Kamsa, it was almost complete. And for those who are devotees, it was ultimate liberation. Yeah.
I was noticing that we're talking about time. If you go to a prison, they a lot of times call that they're serving time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a a time out from the regular life, so mm-hmm. they're just serving time of mm-hmm. little value. And then with Madhumati's question, I was noticing that how time does get adjusted. We have a couple different stories. Like there's a saying, time and tide wait for no man.
Mm-hmm.
But for the gopis during the rasa dance, the time was changed.
Mm-hmm.
It said it took place for a night, a day of Brahma.
Mm-hmm.
So the time was changed there. And then there's that story about the lady who's so chaste that she stopped the sun from rising.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the tattva, or the general use of time, and then reminding me of this verse here, that 2:3:17, it says both the rising and the setting of the sun decreases mm-hmm. the duration of everyone,
mm-hmm.
except for one who utilizes the time by discussing topics of the all good personality of Godhead. So time acts in different ways.
Yeah, thank you for the addition. And also, we can also say that time is relatively perceived according to what we are doing. Like if you are if the dentist is, you know, drilling the teeth, you know, one moment seems to be like eternity. And when you are, you know, spending time, you know, with your lover, then, you know, the hours, they just turn into moment, you know. And Lord Chaitanya, he says in Shikshashtaka, yugayatam nimeshana chakshusha, yugayatam nimeshana. So one nimesha, one fraction of time, seems like yuga to me, yugayatam nimeshana. So time has some, you know, objective measures, we can say, and time is also subjectively perceived by different people, you know, depending on what they are doing and what state of consciousness they are. So, in hell, living entities, in their subjective perception, it seems to them like millions of years. Actually, it's not like that. It's not millions. But in their subjective perception, it's very long because they're suffering. So when they're suffering, time, you know, is very long. But when we are enjoying it, you know, it passes very quickly. Yeah.
You said that monks achieved impersonal liberation. But I remember, at least I think I remember, I went one time to Los Angeles for the Prabhupada Festival. I was staying in the Brahmachari Ashram, and one of the devotees was reading about how Krishna killed Hamsa. And first he said that he got liberation. And, okay? First he said he got liberation. That was the first thing he stated. And this devotee said, oh, isn't that so wonderful? I said, what's so wonderful? And then he went on and read that he went to the Vaikuntha planets. At least that's the way I remember. Huh? No, that's not Hamsa. It's Kalanini. Hmm? I don't know. I was going to try to look it up.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone know? Anyone remember?
Well, I think time is up, so it's 9 o'clock.
What kind of liberation comes from that? He said he saw him on the corner the other day.
Okay, it's 9 o'clock, so we can end here. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.